When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You want to record from this point on, Mr. Jules Gill, that right. I will hit the button and we are now recording.
Everything is now on the record. Ladies and gentlemen, I am shocked and appalled by what I see in front of me today. You guys will not be able to see this, but Scott Tailford, the man, the legend, the myth, is sitting there, not in a dressing gown.
What am I wearing though? What's this beautiful garment that I've got on that they'll never see?
You're wearing a lovely fisherman's sweater. It looks absolutely amazing. And I know why you're wearing it too, because you had a hard on for when we started speaking about turtlenecks the other day in the chat. Yeah, and then you were like, oh, I want to get that, Jack from Bioshock vibe going on?
Kind of. That was my reference photo, but it was also Chris Evans's jumper from Knives Out. That was the sort of double helix looking pattern. This is almost
good film, by the way.
Oh, it's beautiful. One of the best films, I was going to say ever made, but one of the best films in the last few years. But I just wanted the whole double helix, you know, woolly thing, makes you look about 80 years old, but
it
I am very toasty.
You.
Thank
it
you
looks
very
really,
much.
Really, really nice.
See,
mate.
All
it
these
really
nice things that we've said are why I'm wearing it and not a dressing gown. But it's not that you shouldn't give up the dream. You've embraced it eventually.
See, I'm wearing a dressing gown and also my really badly aged cyberpunk I played it before launch hoodie, which is just not going down in today's
I survived
climate.
It before launch. We should probably say that this is the UPP.
UPP.
As in the Untitled Banter podcast, I'm Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
And every week we ask you guys whatever the hell's on in your mind, but we also have the Take Trough, which is a collection of various questions and thoughts and things from the last few weeks. Now, I have combined everything into one big feed, and then I sort of went in and I sort of swapped some things around. So we've got a nice, healthy mix of video games and food, because that seems to be just what we are now, which is good. I like it.
It's because people are starting to recognize that we're right when it comes to food. I mean, we won't discuss your whole vinegar on korma thing.
I'm not going to lie. I have retired that. I did have a whole thing where I used to put vinegar on everything. And it's not that I don't think it should be on in abundance on appropriate things, you know, like chips or lasagna, to just, you know, throw it out there. But I'm not putting it on pizza anymore. I'm not putting it on the mad stuff. I think that's the thing that I've retired. But it's because on my 30th, both Adam Cleary, I can't think who it was like a bunch of people piled in together and bought me a big vat of vinegar.
A big
drum. And so did someone else of one of my friends, got me the exact same present. And then I was just like, this is too much. I'm too known for this. And
becoming
also
a gimmick.
Yeah. And also the second vinegar vat thing went to a little old woman who lives up the road because I wasn't in, and it got delivered to her. So I had to try and explain to her why I need this vat thing. And she just thought I was like a drug dealer or something. She was like,
No. Sorry. I know that we should be getting on with the podcast, but at the same time, your story there is a little old lady.
Yeah.
And then you said a vat of acid.
Vat of vinegar.
Did you throw it in her face? Is this
No. She'd taken it because I wasn't in, so she'd accepted this big old sort of oil drum of vinegar.
Oh, right, okay. And then she'd taken it as if she's nicked it from you, and then she'd had a go at you for what she's stolen.
That would have been less awkward. No, I had to go to this woman's house and be like, oh, you've got my vat of vinegar. Can I have
it,
please?
That means she opened the package.
She did, yeah. She proper broke the law. Full on.
What the hell?
I know. And then she was like, oh, it's a bit weird, isn't it, vinegar? And I was like, well, yeah, but it's all.
It's a bit weird that you opened my package, mate.
Well, I'm not one for the hostilities, so I just sort of went.
sloshed with the old vinegar. I got buckets to spare, but I can
you
do
like
this all
it
day.
Now, do you? Yeah, and so I eventually, so I just sort of said, yeah, I've got a friend who's like into foods, and they thought it would be funny to get me some vinegar and blah. And then eventually she was like, well, I suppose you could take it then. And so I was away back home.
But, I suppose you could take it. It's your bloody packet.
Oh, well, you know what?
No, this is a story for another time.
The British folk. Anyway, so yeah, so I got home with my big vat of vinegar, and then my wife was like, what are you going to do with that? And I was like, garage, I guess. So it's just two vats of vinegar in the garage. And
you've
I thought,
like one of those big beer hats, this. You know, the ones with the two cans on either side.
If that went down into like a sprayer and I could sort of like spray my food, then yeah, maybe, but it's not going to work as an inhalation technique. Anyway, let's talk about some video games. Well, kind of. There's a mix. First question from Mick H, though, or Mike H. Will Konami show respect for the rumored Metal Gear Solid remake, or will it be a greedy cash grab? If it's even true, I guess.
It's a loaded question, that, because if Konami have got their hands on it, it's not the sense that I think that they'll do another cash grab. They know how badly it backfired when they did Metal Gear Survive. And we haven't seen anything from that series since. So at least they've actually kept out of that, even though they've got the IP. They could wheel it out if they wanted to. However, what they are known for is absolutely bungling everything that they touch. They're like the comedy pratfall of video games. Like, you go, like, you kind of, after a while, you don't get annoyed at them anymore. You just go, oh, Konami, you absolute silly sausage. What are you doing?
I did see a thing that they were restructuring their gaming and their game department or whatever. So a lot of people thought that maybe Silent Hill would, that whole rumor of Sony buying Silent Hill would come true. Maybe they would do something with Metal Gear, and nothing came of that. Some Konami spokesperson was like, don't worry, we're not leaving gaming, we're just restructuring. So
how
you never know.
How do you restructure an entire 100 monkey filled room with typewriters? Like, that's
get them new typewriters, apparently.
Yeah, true. Yeah, they replace the E key.
Keep doing what you were doing. But yeah, I think we're in a strange place with remakes, because there's the Activision stuff that's like super deluxe. You've got a couple of old school remasters that are just texture overhauls. We're yet to see what the Mass Effect one's going to be. And I think that when Konami enter that ring, I think, I don't know, it's whether they want to chase the Activision dollar and then maybe do something else with the IP after it's been revitalized, or if it will just be a re-release. I assume that it'll be an overhaul, but I don't know whether the dude that fell out with Kojima or even still works there, because he'd be the guy going like, I don't want any time taken on this.
Yeah, well, they've not got a good track record with remasters either, because the horrifying Silent Hill HD pack, now they gave that to Hijink Studios, who were in charge of that, and apparently they came back to them saying like, can we have this, that and the other, because we need this to make to remaster the game, and Konami didn't even give them the full source code, so they were working already at, I think, so that shows they don't really have a lack of a full respect for their own IPs.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, there was some source code that was missing through no fault of their own, but quality checks should have come in and said, hey, look, lads, that the fog should still be there.
It's like doing Resident Evil 3 Nemesis and just getting rid of Nemesis. I didn't have a code for it, so I couldn't do it. Just put someone else there instead. Walking around.
Chinko machine comes out and attacks you instead. That's
the modern day equivalent. That's how terrifying it is. But yeah, I don't know. Konami don't care about video games. They do Pro Evo and they've got Pachinko. I think it's a box to be ticked if it's even true. There's an ongoing anniversary thing for Metal Gear where Jordan Vogt Roberts, I think it was him, got the entire cast back together, David Hayter and Paul Eading and whatever, all the other people, to talk about Metal Gear. So I don't know if that's eventually going to lead to something. David Hayter's on Twitter saying, no, it's not. I promise it's not anything more than this. But he would say that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, that makes me feel like it's going to happen even more.
You never know. So yeah, next question from Chingis. Any thoughts on how Reddit kind of put a whole bunch of money into GameStop? And would love to hear about that. Have you been following this whole thing? Because it's a big old
thing. I'm not going to lie. I've tried to follow this. It's actually like I will completely hold my hands up here and say that I am a dullard when it comes to the stock market, but I understand the concept after watching The Big Short many times.
I could not follow that movie at all.
I think I get it now. So I think that the whole stock shorting, using GameStop as this sort of thing to be like, no, you can't just like bet that this is going to fail, we're going to prove you wrong, and the small individual investors making a ton of money and now are in threat of being shut down completely. It's a horrible, horrible situation where a few people made a bit of money and not through the best means, let's be honest. No one's got it wearing a clean hat in this scenario.
No, I guess not.
But,
yeah.
to come out the other side and for the regulators to go, oh, we're going to make sure that you can't do this again to the little people, while the hedge fund people and the bigger banks are literally doing this every single day with other people's money. I feel like it's so unfair. Like, like you should either have it where if you're going to embrace a fully capitalist thing where this is allowed and this is okay, then you need to accept that anyone is able to change the market. Mm-hmm. However, we're going to now go for bailouts. We're going to go for all of these small groups being shut out of opportunities like this. Maybe that's for the best. Maybe it's for the worst. It's hard to say. But all you're really doing is consolidating the power in the market to these big corporations that are doing it anyway. So that's my take. And please let me know if I'm wrong with any of this, because I do have a very sweeping statement there.
My understanding of this was a mix of me going, well, I didn't understand The Big Short, and then I talked to Mr. Adam Cleary about it. There's a brilliant explainer on the channel. He actually does a really good job of breaking down what shorting is and stuff like
that. Go watch that then.
Go watch that. That got me a little bit closer to understanding what happened. I still have a bunch of questions as to why a company like GameStop, who were already plummeting, would give their stocks to other people on a sharing basis anyway, unless they don't have any control over it. I literally don't know. I get the whole power struggle thing. I think the takeaway conversation around, like, you know, where does power lie in the stock market and upending that, I think that stuff is fascinating. And I hope that, you know, if you want to be able to make money, you should be able to make money. And you, that Robinhood app thing that's just shut down seems like the wrong move, but that's being investigated.
I really am intrigued to see the power of the internet being shown in full force. Like, as many jokes as like people will make, and as memeified as this moment will be in history, it proves that there is, like, if you get the right upswell from social media, from sites like Reddit and stuff like that, you can actually enact proper change on the world.
Oh, it's now insane. Yeah.
What I'm annoyed at is that it seems that how and why was this motivation never there for a libertarian cause, something that actually benefited people rather than just the few and gave those people their money? It's a monetary influence, and I wish that it could have been for a more beneficial one.
Well, I think now that this has happened, then it's proven that it can happen. That I mean, there's so much in here. There's so even philosophical stuff about the idea of what is money, how do we change it, what's the power of it, and just it's just statistics on a screen and everything else. I think that because this has happened on such a large scale, such a mainstream sense, that the BBC's picking up on it. The White House chimed in. I saw AOC did a stream breaking it down.
Yeah.
And it's like, now that this has happened on such a massive scale, you would think that it would upend the way that, I guess, power exists in the stock market and who's allowed to have access to it and what those allowances even are, even to get in there in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. I mean, the latest development was that the Robinhood trading app is shut down, but like that's being investigated as well, because that seems to be nefariously linked. We've probably made a million mistakes talking about it anyway, but you know, stocks in that.
That's the problem when you come to talk about stuff like this, because there it's an ever ongoing conversation and the facts are constantly writing themselves as to what is happening around now. So this might be completely invalidated within 24 hours, such is the world that we live in. But as of right now, that's our standpoint question.
My takeaway as a person who doesn't know stocks at all, whose only real reference point is a movie I didn't understand and the turnip trading market in Animal Crossing.
Classic.
Is just that if anyone can get access to this thing and game the system as much as people who have been doing it for decades have done, and they then get annoyed about it, I'm probably going to be on the side of the underdog type people trying to sort of upend stuff. But that, I have no idea what's going on, and we'll figure it out as we go. Next question though, from Laughing Sun Bro, what are British foods that we Americans know nothing about? The podcast has already introduced me to dippy eggs, yay, and Marmite. Dear God, why? Why are some other that would blow my mind? I tell you what came to mind with this, because just before, in the middle of all, you know, the ongoing madness, because we're still in national Locky D over in the UK, I was sitting having a lovely Dunky biscuit. I was just dunking some biscuits. And I experienced the moment of just pure bliss. I was just sort of sitting there going, this is the best thing ever, isn't it, really? Like, if more people could dunk biscuits, there'd probably be world peace.
I tell you what, mate, I saw an absolute mad lad the other day in the form of my granddad. Like, I was on the old FaceTimes with him back before Christmas, and he was I was sitting there and he was having a little dunk in myself. And I was like, what are you up to? What are you up to, granddad? What are you dunking there? He's like, dunking a pink wafer, boy. I'm like, you're mad. You're actually mad. Like, can I get you sectioned? Because this is not on. Like, I remember wafer. If people haven't had the pink, I don't even know if that's like a thing outside the UK.
It sounds like, a euphemism. Have you had pink wafer?
Yeah, it sounds like a little bit of pink wafer. Like, but the pink wafer is like, it's a biscuit with a layer of nice sort of filling. It's pink, it's sweet, it's lovely. It should never be dunked, but it was going straight in his teeth.
Did it work? Did he like it?
He loved it. But then again, what do you expect from a man who's got, well, I think he's got false teeth.
He's just making it into a mush so he can suck it down.
we should trust my granddad, actually, because he's had, I think he's had three strokes. So he clearly knows, he knows good food, if you know what I mean.
He's he's refined his life. He wants to make the most of it. Yeah. I think, I don't know, there's a weird set of rules for biscuit dunking. So I remember trying to teach my wife about it because she like is Asian. She grew up in an Asian household.
Your wife. I love that.
We had the best time because I realized that she'd never dunked a biscuit before, which again is not a euphemism. Literally, it's taking a biscuit and dunking it. But there are rules in which specific biscuits can be dunked and for how long. Peter Kay did a whole stand up about it. When I found out that she'd never done it, we then had the idea of making a platter of all the different biscuit types and then having a cup of tea each. Amazing. And just going through it and then grading them, like what worked, what didn't, what fell apart, what didn't, you know, have the strength to hold on. And obviously Hobnobs, Peter Kay style, did win out.
They're the best.
But Rich Tea's brilliant. Standard Digestive's brilliant. And also those, what are they, Belvita breakfast biscuits? Loving them.
Oh,
mate.
Really? I wouldn't expect them to.
I know, and they're quite thin, but you've got to cut. That's the thing, I sort of think of it as like catch it on the bite, like the old Ross Noble joke. It's like the clutch in a car. It's like you want to dunk it for a certain amount of time. There's a feeling, and then you know when you've taken it too far. But it's like it's a skill. But that would be my thing.
If you've dunked it too far, then there's no point even like trying to lift it back out. No. Just drop the entire biscuit in and make
a
fresh cup.
You've got minimum purchase bringing it back out. Unless the structure has held, it's done. But I don't know if Americans dunk biscuits. I know they dunk stuff in milkshakes. They dunk like burgers in milkshakes and stuff. But if you guys haven't dunked any biscuits, that's my thing.
Do they have bad sausages out there?
Bad sausages?
Battered. Bad sausages.
We got a bad sausage.
I'm trying to think of like stuff that's like traditionally English that people might not have had. Because annoyingly, we can't even claim to like have weird flavors for our sweets because like Kit Kats, for example, in Japan have got like green tea flavor and stuff
like
that.
So much better ones.
Like we don't have any of that stuff. We're quite boring. do they have boost
have
bars?
Tea cakes. I don't know if they have, I mean, I guess you're like, boost
Mate.
Bars.
What? Fries. Jesus Christ. What
fries
are they
to
called?
Go?
Fries. Mint cream chocolate bars. Okay. Do they have them?
I don't even know what that is. Where's that from?
It's like a dark chocolate with the inside of it is like that mint, what's it called? Fondant stuff. Okay. It's lush. It's so good.
So that was fries mint type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely wouldn't get an advert based on how I described it just there. Like the advert, it's in that direction.
It's just
really nice. I mean, if you like mint, if you like sort of like gooey center stuff and you like dark chocolate, what a winner. What an absolute winner.
It sounds beautiful. I guess other people could send in their questions as to American, home remedy stuff that most of the world hasn't tried yet. Yeah, like the idea of dunking a biscuit isn't exactly announced anywhere, but we all sort of know.
No.
I don't know.
I'm actually Googling now traditional English. Traditional English.
My mind just
food.
Goes for like shepherd's pie and stuff, but you can't do anything with that. Mix it up.
Do they do the old Yorkshire puds?
Oh, I don't know. Yorkshire puds.
If you don't do Yorkshire puds, mate, then get out of my dojo, son. You know,
like I would. Those massive ones, those rustic ones that came in across the last few years, probably been going for decades. But I discovered it
when the entire meal is inside.
Not
the pile.
No, not that big, but the ones that are sort of closer to a traditional size, but a bit thicker, a little bit bigger, and they've just got a little. It's they're made differently. They're a bit thicker in general.
As soon as
I discovered them, you get four in a packet. They're a bit beautiful. We could not be more older English men. One man in a dressing gown, one man in an old BioShock jumper.
I feel like we just need to be down the pub and the smoking ban to be back off, you know,
with one of those weird pints that looks like a turtle shell, like
the dimpled glass.
That'd be a good name for this podcast, the dimpled glass. Anyway, next question from Ewan Callister. What's the worst Sonic the Hedgehog game? For me, it's the god-awful Shadow the Hedgehog game. I never played Shadow.
How could you ever say that it's not Sonic 06? That game is finished. that game is literally held together by the sheer collective will of everyone in the room.
Yes.
I hate that game with like an unbridled passion because Sega was really, really bad with that. Mm-hmm. They were like, right, this is going to be our first next gen at the time experience for Sonic. Let's get it right. And they kicked it out and they forced it out way earlier than it should have been. Mm-hmm. And it was just a broken mess. And they didn't even bother to like put any patches in that fixed it to a reasonable state. It is, if you can get through the game without having like a game breaking thing, then it's like, that's a godsend. Speedrunners for that game. I don't know why there is a speedrunning section for this game, but I guess for every game there is. Like it getting through it without like hard resetting is considered to be like a what do they call it? Like a god run.
Like just surviving those things that that game throws at you. There's I would recommend there's a really good there's a guy called Matt McMuscles. He used to be part of the Two Best Friends Play. They sort of split and he does his own stuff. He did a history of Sonic 06. Like it's called What Happened. He used to pick
that
game.
Yeah, but he goes, what happened?
What happened? And he's like, delve into that. And yeah, his breakdown of what happened with those dev teams and the different versions of that game and what we got and everything else. Like that's good if you want to sort of dive into that. But yeah, Sonic 06 will be my shout too. That was the game that made me go, oh my God, what have you guys done? Like I never liked 3D Sonic anyway. And then the proportions look weird. And it was just, it was all over.
If we're going to go for an older one though, Sonic R.
Oh, I never played it. Sonic R was the game that I couldn't believe. I couldn't play it because it was on Sega Saturn, I think. And I couldn't get that. I couldn't afford the console. I was so good.
The reason why it's called Sonic R is because you literally go, like, as soon as you boot up, you go, oh, Sonic, oh my Christ. Oh, my Christ.
But yeah, the 06 one by far. Next question from KillTheDJ95. They want to 100% Resident Evil 2 remake, but they can't bring themselves to play through it multiple times. How did you motivate yourself to do the same game over and over?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Do you know what? It's just getting stuck into that gameplay loop. It's about just looking at it less. You go through it once to enjoy it. Then you go through it and you take off those specific challenges. When it comes down time to do those really hardcore speed run ones where you've got to get under 2 hours or an hour and a half, I think it is, and you only allow 3 saves across the entire thing. I just made it into that thing of like, get up in the morning, have a go at it. If I get to the stage where I do it, make a save file and then just leave it for the day. Don't push yourself to get it all done in one go.
Because you did do everything, didn't you? Like, I remember
I did 100% it, yeah.
Yeah, that was because I remember I did the main story and you restarted and I did that again. And I remember you being like, oh, I'm doing like the hunk stuff. I'm doing all the time trial stuff.
Yeah.
I just, that was a level of dedication that I couldn't muster.
did all of the special extra little episode things that they added on, mm-hmm. even got the bloody cat ears, which is like the infinite ammo thing for the for going through the wave defense thing and only using, I think it was like 50 bullets or something like that. Right. Like, oh my God, dude, it took so long. But at the same time, I walked away from it and really enjoyed the experience. The problem is, though, is mm-hmm. I do feel that my love and passion for that game might have killed Resident Evil 3's remake, because I went into it expecting to be like, boom, this is going to be another like 2 month game sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be like on this all the time, and then I completed it, did half the challenges, and I was like, oh, then there's no DLC for it, there's no like thing for it. Oh,
I would still hold up that remake, whatever they want to call it, feels like glorified DLC. If they did it as a Nemesis add-on to 2, it would have made more sense, yeah. But yeah, I mean, those games play incredibly well, but in terms of, I never played as much as Jules, but I think putting it into your daily routine is a shout. Like, I did that with Metal Gear 5, trying to see as much of it as possible.
Wait, you've 100% in Metal Gear 5?
Not 100, but I used to do like 12-hour stints on that game. I was just I was off work, and I was like, I'd just get up early, go on it, and then like just play it. Just
didn't
play
you feel like really? Didn't you feel like really zoned out when you came out of those long sessions? Like, whoa, really. I'm not in touch with reality, because I can only play for like maybe 2 or 3 hours now, and I'll be speaking to my partner, and it will just be like, I'm just like, I'm not here. Like, my brain's mush now. Sorry,
I'm still in the desert searching for different guards to headshot. No, I mean, it depends what the game is. That's that and The Witcher 3. Like, it's very rare that something completely like takes me in that much. But like, mm-hmm. no, I love living in those worlds. I think for me, it's more like if you play something like Guitar Hero too long, and then you come out of it, and your vision is just warping. Like, it depends. How intense maybe a hood is. Next question from TJ, kind of like a two-part question. Do you feel that people's expectations are too high when it comes to playing new and complex games such as Cyberpunk on older hardware? Also, as someone who played Spider-Man Miles Morales on a PS4 Pro, they still had many bugs and loading issues, but they knew that it was designed for the new SSD, so they accepted the state of the game before purchase. Would it make more sense for companies to just not release games on older platforms?
I actually would agree that if they want to make the jump properly, you shouldn't really go across this cross-platform thing, because it was the same when like Breath of the Wild came out, and mm-hmm. then it was like the Switch version was far superior to the Wii U version, and everyone was like,
it ran a bit smoother,
it just looked like better, and you could tell that it was like that was an okay example of it working on both platforms. But you can look at countless other examples where the severe downgrade for the previous
Cyberpunk
thing
is huge.
Yeah, and it's a real shame, because I feel like Cyberpunk was obviously trying to cast as wide a net as possible, but it probably would have been in their best interest if they had just said, right, we're going to develop it for this and this, like PC, PS5, Xbox, new Xbox, and then just not gone for the previous console, which it probably would have cost them a ton of money, though. I don't know if it is now.
Yeah, the thing with Cyberpunk is obviously its marketing cycle was 8 years long, or 7 years long, so it's like... It's a weird optics thing, though, as a potential, because if you're putting this game together, you have this whole marketing department, and you realize that the vision of the game that you've got, that you've been developing on top-end PCs, is now barely going to run on those original systems that you initially announced it for. Do you then get out there and say, hey, look, for the best experience, play on this thing, but also be aware that if you're going to play on this console, we actually couldn't get this feature to run as well, and you will experience XYZ bugs and glitches? Or is that just marketing suicide, because you're getting out there saying that this version of the game is inferior?
I think it's marketing suicide to an extent, but there are examples where it did work. I'm trying to think. When Guitar Hero 3 came out for the Xbox 360, it was given to another developer to come out for the PS2, and it had more limited features and stuff, but it came out at a budget price.
Right.
So you got like the core game, but for less money. Maybe if they'd done that, or maybe if they just said like, not all content's going to make it to the PS4, say all the story missions will be there, but you won't be able to do this, that, and that. That will for the expanded experience, that. Because then I feel like you're still delivering the core experience in it being well made. Mm-hmm. You're giving more to the people who are investing in the future of it.
Yeah, my go-to example for like just in a weird way to handle cross-gen releases is Splinter Cell Double Agent. And I think I brought it up on a different week, but like that game had two completely different versions on different systems developed with those systems in mind. For me, I want games that have the target system in mind or a target set of specs.
Like going back in time to when the same game used to release for like the Mega Drive and the SNES, you'd have like Turtles in Time is a great example because they came out, they actually had the same sort of like aesthetic style, but the graphic system was completely different for the SNES to the Mega Drive one. There was a different level loadout. There was different like extras and secrets that were in each game. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it still felt like a unique experience key to that system. Mm-hmm. but it was a complete, it was obviously built from the ground up to be completely different. Maybe if they'd tried that approach with it.
I think it's like, I think he makes, TJ makes a good point about, you know, accepting the state of the game as in this is the best that my set of hardware can do. However, I don't, I think that's a really hard thing to get across optically, like marketing wise, because you want to let the, basically for me, it all boils down to you need to know what you're buying. And obviously in Cyberpunk's case, they still have trailers on the channel that are, this is PlayStation 4 gameplay and it isn't.
And like, it's just not,
It's just not. And so like you were, same with No Man's Sky, like this is the game running and it wasn't. And so I think there's that whole thing, which is you can completely drill that down and be like, just don't lie to consumers, really. Like there is that. But obviously the reality of game development, things don't come together until the closing months of release. They're aiming for a certain spec the whole time and they think they can get there. Is that still a lie if they want to show you what they're trying to get to? I think that trying to get their thing is what they could get across more.
Yeah, I feel like the disconnect between what's going on behind the scenes with the developers and the marketing team is like, I mean, it's their job to hype it up and get as many sales in through the door as possible. And sometimes that does come at the expense of the developers' hard work, because at the end of the day, the PR firms, they're not taking a hit for this. They did their job. They got those sales. The devs, on the other hand, are being crucified for not being able to deliver what other people promised.
Is it with Halo 5 as well? Just super quickly, like that whole marketing campaign was a complete lie and they had to admit that.
Yeah, with Locke and Master Chief's fighting thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, oh yeah, we just, that was an idea that we just took and ran with as the marketing department. And then it just wasn't in the game. IGN called them out, we called them out, whatever. And then it was a whole thing. And they just said like, oh, yep, sorry. Like, yeah, that was a thing that the marketing department went with. And
as they count their dollar bills sort of thing. Like, yeah. Invest in turnips, is it? Yeah.
It was ridiculous. What was the thing you were going to say, sorry?
It was basically the same sort of thing that you were saying there, just marketing companies, the disconnect from that. I feel like if there was better communication internally within these companies, then maybe we wouldn't even get to these stages. But it just shows...
I think it's super interesting going forward in terms of like, you think of how movies are developed, like maybe at a push you get to see some people on set, like, oh, such and such actor has been spotted on set, but you don't really get a glimpse. Like Mortal Kombat's movie is out in a few months, the new one. And as much as we've had are a couple of screenshots and some tiny seconds of footage from an HBO sizzle reel and some screenshots, nothing when that game is in production and nothing that would lead you astray as to, like, they're only going to show it off when it's the finished edited version or edited shots anyway. And maybe stuff gets cut, like a Star Wars Rogue One or whatever. But for the most part, you're getting what's advertised. Gaming is just such a different beast in terms of how they come together. And I think they're still using a film style marketing thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example is the Iron Man scene, the infamous one where with him throwing the helmet to Pepper Potts and saying, I love you or something like that. And then he jumps out and that wasn't in the film at all. It was just used for the trailer to build interest. And it's like they filmed a completely separate scene just to use for trailer bait. Like, does that mean that it's a deceptive thing of the overall final product? No, because at the end of it, he does actually say, I'm pretty sure he says, I love you. And I'm pretty sure the relationship is there, but it's exactly false advertising. It is not in the film. It is not in the final product that you'll be receiving.
I was listening to Giant Bomb's Game of the Year stuff, and they were talking about Last of Us 2 and the way that game was shown off before launch. They did a pre-release hands-on section of the game where you played as Ellie and Joel showed up at the end in person talking to her. Yeah, and Naughty Dog literally made fake assets to convince the press pool at the time that that was the way the story was going to go. So to obviously reinforce the big twist from the beginning of the actual game.
Yeah.
So in that case, they committed to a certain line of marketing, which personally I really like, because I like the idea of the actual experience of the finished product being the thing that sticks with you, and whatever a creative needs to do to maintain that gut punch, if they're going for a gut punch, I'm all behind that. And same in Star Trek's case in Into Darkness, like they showed the Enterprise crashing, but then when you saw the movie, it wasn't the Enterprise, it was the villain ship, and then it was like a whole thing. And so for me, I view the marketing as part of the ride, and if it's done well. And that's the thing that I think for gaming, there should just be so many more channels like Noclip, like Danny O'Dwyer's Noclip, showing you games being made along the way. And maybe that would solve the optics problem, but it would mean overhauling marketing for gaming.
Yeah, completely. True. Very true.
So maybe. Next question from Steve. What is your go-to build when playing a Soulsborne game for the first time? I seem to always gravitate towards that big bonk play style, even on New Game Plus.
I'm absolutely all about, when I first picked up the Dark Souls 1, I went for the old classic turtle poke build, like hide behind the shield and go there. Same, now, anytime that I pick up a Dark Souls title after that, I'm all about like spell slinging, getting in there, just getting as much aggression out as possible, because I've realized that the way I play games is very like boneheaded. Like I just go like, right, if there's a goal, I'm going like the straightest path towards that. If there's enemies in the way, then you better bloody get out of it. Like I will go...
I've never been been able to do is the weight build. I've never been able to just play comfortably with a fat roll. I always just find that it just, I need to get out the way. Like if something's
like,
coming at me.
I always have to have the minimum weight allowance. Like I need to be fast rolling everywhere because I'm just like, I can't, my brain can't do the whole like, oh wait, I'm not invincible here and I'm really slow.
Yeah. But then, and it's like, I know you're going to hit hard, but then the timing window, you're going to charge it up. And I'm like, oh God, it's like, it's too sludgy for me.
Yeah. I do love those games though. They really do allow for so much creativity with your builds. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't remember if it's a guy called Sunlight Pro or something like that, who does like PvP kills of the week and stuff like that. And you can watch how people have built specific characters, even like to try and emulate other characters from other IPs. Mm-hmm. There's a guy who made like a Darth Vader build who like literally has like the Wrath of the Gods force push uses like a lightsaber looking style weapon. Uh-huh. But like, he's built a character, an entire build around that. And I love the creativity from that.
PvP in Souls just gives me anxiety. Like just one-on-one, I'm always just like, this person's just going to flatten me. I mean, it feels like nothing else if you ever win, but like that one-on-one thing just destroys me. Yeah. But still, quick question from Jeff Usano, chips or crisps?
Oh, well, as in like the pronunciation or what our favorite?
What's your gut goes? My gut goes to Flavor Town.
Well, the thing is I know that if he's American, that we call our crisps. Well,
let's go off the UK definition because they don't have chips at all. So I guess it has to be.
Think of potato chips. Potato chips are what the American version of our crisps are.
Yes.
They're crisp because they're potato slices that have been crisped. That is why they are crisp. So, but then they call their crisps chips.
Yeah.
Because
it's a crazy world.
Of the potato, I assume that's what they do. Maybe it's just because we bake ours and they do something else with it. I don't know what they do with it.
I don't know because what do they call a bag of, they call a bag of crisps chips, and then they have chips which are fries, but what do they call thicker chips? I mean, thicker fries to them. Like thicker.
I don't know.
They just not have them? Like, you know when you get like a nice thick chip, like for us.
I'm going to stop you there. Like starting with the sentence of, does America have this? Of course it does. It has everything. And like their regulation for food is appalling. So they will have whatever.
I'm just saying, I was lucky enough to go to New Orleans. I've been to New York. At no point did I have anything other than fries across multiple restaurants, multiple cafes. I didn't see any fat chips, hashtag fat chips at all. And I wish that I did. I don't know if that's something that they have or they can invest in, but you never
oven know. Chips, I guess is how you describe them.
Just bigger chips.
Flavor. We're doing flavor of the thing. Okay. So flavor of crisps.
Well, I was doing gut punch like appeal because I'll take a nice basket of chips with lovely salt and vinegar over a bag of crisps. That's
funny. Oh hell yeah! I'm totally with you on that one. Like if they're those triple cooked, crunchy on the outside, little fluffy on the inside, dipping in a bit of like mayo or like the barbecue sauce.
I tell you what. Speaking of American things that I brought, I didn't bring it back from America, but I realized it existed. Baconese, which I know you can't have because you're sticking to
vegans. I can because they've got a vegan stuff now.
Oh, there he is. Beautiful. So yeah, Baconese, what a revolution that is. Like just bacon and mayo, just brilliant. Like proper, like peanut butter chocolate style combo. Just trust the Americans to invent something brilliant in the food realm. It's lovely. Classic. Let's end on a question from a PG Quips, which is the best name that I could do. Much as I love shiny 4K graphics, ray tracing, lots of frames being poured into my eyeballs, I can't wait to see something truly next gen. Destructive environments, better AI, more players, an anti-cheat system that actually works. What are either of you hoping for this generation?
I'm hoping, as I said before in the previous UBP, to actually be able to back a game, review it, and actually have it have a smooth launch. That's all I want. That's
playable
all I want,
games
guys.
At launch,
That's all I want is a playable game at launch. No hiccups, no fuss, no muss. Just get it out there.
I'd back that. I think he mentioned destructible environments. Having played and now almost got the platinum on Wreckfest, I mentioned this the other week, but I adore Wreckfest so much. I just found an excuse to put it in a list because I just need to talk about this game. But I love when you send a car flying off into the distance and they just barrel through like a billboard and a few stacks of tires, and the deformation model on your car leaves a huge dent. And I miss physics. I've mentioned this loads, but I miss physics in games. And I hope someone brings that back in a big way.
I mean, at one point in time, in an alternate reality, there's a Scott Telford that is opening a bag and pulling out from inside it a remastered and remade version of PsyOps. And he's like crying with tears. And then he goes, but wait, there's more. And he pushes the first game aside to reveal a remake of Second Sight.
Oh, then he dies because he doesn't want it.
Physics aplenty in there.
Yeah, my show would still be PsyOps. Speaking of 2000s games, not relating to a question that we got, but have you seen that crazy werewolf game? It's called like Werewolf Earthblood, The Beginning,
Ice, or whatever. I think if I just open up my emails, I think we have had some stuff about that.
Yes.
Recently.
I'm just mentioning
why?
That because
why are we
it's
bringing
just,
it up for?
It's the most 2007 game ever, and I'm so there for it. And I think it looks like it'll be like a sort of 6, 7 out of 10. But just, I like that that's coming
you
back.
You love
like,
your
man,
6, 7 out of 10.
I'm loving my, I love a good 6, 7 out of 10 game. Like, it's not trying to be 200 hours long. It's not trying to change the industry. It's not trying to revolutionize cinematography. It's just a nice, just a man who's a werewolf. Just give me that. Like, maybe that's all we need sometimes. And yeah, playing like Maneater, I couldn't get away with that, but I sort of restarted it. Just playing as a shark, you know, he's a shark with a laser that you can get. And then now it's a werewolf man. Do you know
amazing. Totally, mate. Like any sort of like asymmetrical thing where you get to like be a big monster taking down something else, fine. I'm game. If you come out and you tell me it's a 7 out of 10, I'll get it.
I'll be amazed if it's higher than a 6, but I guess we'll see what happens. It's out next week, I think.
I think you should do your new rating system. It should just go 1 to 10, right? Yes. Out of 10, but it should miss out the 7, and the 7 out of 10 should be like the lucky 7 from Final Fantasy 7. And it should be like, that's the one that you're aiming for. Like, it's like you're spinning the slot with us.
Like Crisis Core.
Yeah, it's like, this game's better than a 10 out of 10. It's a 7 out of 10.
I'm putting it out there that sometimes all you need is a really, really good 6 to 7 out of 10. PsyOps is a beautiful 7 out of 10. Maybe an 8.
Maybe we should ask the audience then. Ask them what their favorite 7 out of 10 game is, and go tweet us over on Twitter with the hashtag of UBP to either the What Culture Gaming Twitter, which is WC Gaming.
I mean, you'll be able to find us by Googling it, or you can come find us on social media. Anyway, I'm going to even roll this into the outro, Jules Gill. You can find us on social media for the hashtag UBP, UBP,
UBP, UBP, UBP.
Because this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to all of you for all the questions. The take trophies are flowing, and we've still got plenty we can carry over to next week. But until then, we'll catch you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.